welcome to Parents' Perspective. That should do it, grinned Dan, arms loaded with several large brown paper bags. The guys at the hardware store seem to know all the stuff we need to childproof our house before your sister and her kids get here. Thanks, hon, for getting all the paraphernalia, replied Bev. Don't think it'll take very long, though, just to put covers on the outlets and a gate at the top of the stairs.
Ho, ho, Dan shot back. You should see what's here. There are latches and electric cord covers and rubber furniture corners and doorknob covers, and that's just for starters, he grinned. I can deal with all that, but you get to have the most fun.
Bev eyed him with suspicion. What do you mean?
Well, you can clear all those glass knick-knacks off the coffee table and take your china teacup collection off the buffet and put it all into a closed cabinet, he began.
Oh, Bev was pensive. Guess that goes for your penknife collection, too. And then, she put her head in her hands, we have to deal with what's under the bathroom and kitchen sinks.
Maybe we should just tie the kids up, Dan chuckled.
From a parent's perspective, what should we know about creating a child-safe home? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guests are professional safety experts for homes with children. Nita Saavedra and Vernon Tell have been in the child safety business for 14 years. They are members of the International Association of Child Safety, IAFCS. Both have been employed in their fields of study. Nita has a PhD in human nutrition, and Vern's is in animal genetics. But they are finding the child safety business rewarding and satisfying, and a wonderful way to meet and work with interesting people. Nita has one son, and they have four grandchildren. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Nita and Vern.
Thank you.
What's the biggest myth we have about child-safe homes today?
I don't know if this can be really considered a myth, but there's two misconceptions that we commonly hear. I watch my child all the time, and my parents didn't do anything like this, and I turned out all right.
That's sort of like you ran into traffic and you didn't get hit.
Yes, right. We understand that the ideal is that you watch your child all the time, but you have to realize that we're human beings. There are times in life when things come at you in all sorts of distractions simultaneously. And it's in those times that having a little extra protection might be the difference between your child being safe or being injured. One of our clients once had his friend over when we were doing an assessment, and the clients asked his friend what he thought of our business and whether we should whether he should use our services. The friend responded that he had just been in the emergency room with his child a day or two earlier.
Oh, my.
He said that anything you can do to keep your child out of the emergency room is well worth it, in his opinion. So we got that. Now, in regards to the my parents didn't do anything kind of comment, your parents didn't have cell phones, CDs, DVDs, three or four televisions in the house, and one of the parents probably stayed home full time. Grandpa and grandma, aunts and uncles were all close by to lend a hand. The number of distractions and other issues, again, it's actually kind of the same response that we get when I watch my child all the time. You're going to be distracted. And just because you think that you turned out all right, you know, what we're thinking about here is trying to keep folks out of the emergency room. That's kind of the major thrust of where we're trying to think about things.
Well, let me add also some things that sometimes our client has told us about some injuries they have incurred. Like, for example, we had a friend of a client whose child fell out of a window straight to a swimming pool. Oh. And this woman had said, if you have been in a trauma center for 7 days, anything is worth childproofing.
Wow.
There's a child of a friend that the mother didn't find out that the child was behind a door, just slammed the door, and the pinky of the child was behind that hinged door.
Oh.
The finger really got slashed,
oh.
And she has to pick it up, and so it could be reattached.
Oh, my God.
And so many of those things that perhaps we take it for granted that it's not going to happen to us. I'm going to be here with my child every time. It's just that split second that a phone rang or you have to go to the bathroom, and you just cannot underestimate a child. They're quick. You cannot underestimate their intelligence because they're probably more intelligent than we are.
And they certainly are curious.
Yep.
What does it mean to childproof a home?
Well, really, there's no such thing as complete childproofing a home. Okay, and that's actually a misnomer, because we could only childproof a home by putting gates, putting latches, but still would require an adult supervision. So childproofing is simply saying that I will have a peace of mind to be able to go to a bathroom, to be able to leave my child for a little while. But it doesn't mean, however, if your home is childproof, that you could leave your child for 3 hours, go to a grocery store, see a movie, and the child will be protected.
Thank you.
You will have to have adult supervision. But childproofing means that you identify hazards in the home. As a parent, you need to get down on your knees and identify hazards in your home. Act like a child. Think like a child. And then look at those hazards and take appropriate steps. Because a lot of these hazards are identifiable and preventable. You could prevent it. It doesn't have to occur because you could see it and view it at the view of a child.
It's funny, I remember that when our kids were little, I could tell the ages of kids by houses we would visit, because when the kids were very young and mobile, there would be nothing on any of the coffee tables. Nothing. Maybe a child, but nothing else.
Or a toy.
Right.
Yeah.
And actually, sometimes we have seen homes that, you know, young couple have just entered a new home. There's nothing other than the bed, and which for us is really good, you know, because there's less thing to worry about, you know, less furniture to bump into, you know, less of those glass tables that a child could climb or things that probably could pose potential dangers for a child.
Do you ever go into a home and say, get rid of this piece of furniture?
Well, there was one time, an occasion, we went to a home where actually our client with the realtor was there because they were about to buy the house.
It had a spiral staircase in it. Mm-hmm.
The stairs are open back. Mm-hmm. And so when they look, when we came there and look at this house, Bern and I just kind of have the sign of the cross. There's just absolutely no way we could childproof a home. And so our client said, what do you think? Well, with the presence of the realtor, of course, we cannot say anything, but I guess we kind of hinted, get out of this house.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Because there's no way to childproof something like that, where things are open back staircase, like the, I mean, you know, stairs
winding.
Yeah.
Oh, my. Good for the magazines, not good for kids.
Good for, for a show house.
Right.
Not
right.
With kids.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on child-safe homes.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, the popular Photers Guide by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Nita Saavedra and Vernon Tell of Children's Safety Care about child-safe homes.
How soon after a baby arrives should a house be made child-safe?
The norm is probably around 6 to 8 months, as that's when the child is just starting to learn how to crawl, and some children actually learn how to roll to get around. That's another technique that you see. So this can be challenging as well, that if the child is rolling. You want to actually try and do the child safety things before the child's actually doing this. Because one of the problems is if your child's already walking already getting around, and you try and do he or she has already gotten into some of these things, then it makes it a little bit more difficult once you install the safety latches or the gates or whatever. They get frustrated and angry about the fact that there's a barrier there. And so it's better to have it that the first time they're exposed to something, if they try to open a door and it's latched, they usually, you know, go on to something else. They find, you know, this isn't interesting. I can't get into it. I can't do something. So they'll do something else. So that's kind of our, you know, and it unfortunately, it kind of goes all over the place in terms of, you know, we've seen children as young as 4 months that are mobile, 4 and 5 months. And we've seen some, you know, some of the children might be 11 or 12 or 13 months. And I don't think that parents should worry about the fact that their child might be a little bit slower. I mean, there's no such thing as normal to some extent. That's something I think also that parents don't need to worry about that. And quite often the children that, say, don't start to learn to crawl at 9 or 10 months, you know, or as opposed to 6 or 8 months, those children catch up. They're fine.
And children, as soon as they can roll, having recently watched my granddaughter, as soon as she could roll from one side to the other, by that time she could grasp a toy. Yeah. Yeah. And so she could grab a pen that was left on the floor, that had been knocked to the floor, which could be a very dangerous toy. Mm-hmm. And she could grab whatever was down there on the floor. So your suggestion about crawling around on the floor and pretending you're at the level of a child is really a key, I think, Nita.
Yeah.
They don't have to be crawling yet to be able to get hold of things that are going to be dangers. And, of course, finding a coin. Very often there's a coin on the floor.
Yeah.
Number one, it's a choking hazard. Number two, the first thing they look for is somewhere to put it. And we all know there are some dangerous places to put a coin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, also, to add to that, what you said is the most common choking hazard that we have seen is home is those door stopper, mm-hmm. you know, where you have that white tip. Okay.
Oh. The little white rubber.
The white rubber. Because one time we had a client who's a surgeon, and we childproof his home, and we showed him this white tip, and he said, "Oh, I didn't know that this is where it's coming from. I have taken out of the throat of my patient who are kids, and he didn't know it was coming from those, and he was yet a father and a surgeon."
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness!
And so that's kind of one of the number one choking hazard in most homes, that children gets attracted because one is spring loaded, so he will have the sound, you know, so they play with it. And one time also, same situation, that the child just took it out, at least gave it to the mother. Mommy?
Oh. Who's falling on the floor at that point?
Getting a little nervous.
Isn't it sometimes better, people say, to childproof a specific room or two and then let the rest of the house be normal so the child learns, no, you can't touch this, no, you can't do that?
I think the best way to answer that question is to tell you exactly how we childproof a home. Okay, the first thing we do to childproof a home before we could even install a gate, a latch, or anything like that, we do a called a child safety assessment. An assessment will come to your home. We walk room by room and identify any hazard or any situation that compromises the safety of a child. Okay, in that process too, we will be able to identify that in most situations that the child is confined to the kitchen and the den area. And then so therefore, we look at every part of this place, the kitchen and the den area, to really childproof that place. And the rest of the, like the front of the house, which basically is the formal living room and the formal dining room, could be off limits. And that we will call that is the adult room. And definitely, of course, the child's room should be childproof. The mother's room could be childproof. The parents' room and their bathroom, respected bathrooms. But guest room, children don't have to go there. So we kind of have something like a device that we just put in the door, a $4.40 device that we put in the door so that if the child even starts opening the doorknob, a child cannot access those rooms. And so, yes, to answer your question, then that to childproof a home, it's probably logical not to childproof the entire house, but just give areas to the children or the kids where they could be safe and a parent could have a peace of mind that they could go to the bathroom and at least their child is confined to a smaller space, not an entire house. But part of our safety assessment, too, we also check water temperature. We recommend, and it's recommended, that water temperature be set at 120 degrees Fahrenheit to prevent a third-degree burn. Because in most homes that we have looked into, they're usually set at 130 or 140. And the difference between 130 and 120 is time. You're buying time. It doesn't mean that if you are set at 120, that a child will not have a third-degree burn. It will take minutes. However, at 130 or 140, it will take only seconds. Mm. And so that will be part of the task when we do the assessment. It's check the water temperature. We talk about the fire escape plan. We talk about poisonous plants. We talk about your CPR training. We talk about use of fire extinguisher and what kind it should be, the best one, the better one, like with an ABC rating. We talk about if you have pets, dogs or cats, because there are certain issues on them. And so after that assessment, we give them a written recommendation, identify every item that we will recommend for them to install, and then we set a time for installation. And so that's actually the process.
You've mentioned that there are a lot of different kinds of pieces of equipment that will help make a home child safe. But in many cases, parents might want to do the job themselves. What kinds of things can they do themselves?
First thing is for them to find out exactly where they want to confine the child. Okay, you cannot just say, okay, well, I need an electrical outlet here to do this, or I need a gate there to do this, and then the next thing, they change their mind. So in other words, they're just buying something that's totally unnecessary. It's for them really think, where do I want my child to be in this home? Do I want the child to roam around the entire house, or do I want the child to just be confined in a specific spot? And from there, now look at the different things that probably would compromise the safety of a child. So if you needed, for example, latches for cabinets and drawers, okay, you could buy them. We recommend latching cabinets and drawers, especially those under the sink, where you normally would put all your detergents or cleaning supplies, your knife drawers. And if you have a fireplace, if you're using it or you're going to use it or not going to use it, that is a big, especially if there are gas fireplaces and the switch are low, that a child could just turn it on. So you need to look at that, because there are certain devices that are available either only to safeguard the child from hitting the heart itself and getting three stitches, or there's also a gate that you could really enclose the entire fireplace, which is called the heart gate. And then you also need to look at how you could confine the child in that kitchen or a den, if that's what you decide. That means you may need a gate. There are many different kinds of gates. The one thing that is not good, especially on top of the stairs, are pressure gate. We do not recommend that parents install pressure gate on top of the stairs or down the stairs, because they pose either a tripping hazard or a scaling hazard, that a child could climb through the gate, because some of them have diagonal openings, mm-hmm. or a threshold that if you open the gate, you have to climb over, which could pose a tripping hazard for both the adults and the child.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on child-safe homes.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Nita Saavedra and Vernon Tell of Children's Safety Care about child-safe homes.
How do we make a home we are visiting child-safe for our visit? That's a little harder, isn't it?
I think that when we were thinking about this, visiting, we meant just for a short period of time, as opposed to traveling, and visiting grandma for a week. You know, I guess it kind of depends on who you're visiting to some extent. Is it an acquaintance kind of thing, or is it grandma kind of, obviously you want to talk to these folks. What you have to do is, which is the same in your home, again, is get down on your hands and knees kind of thing. And you can kind of do it in your home first, and you see those hazards. You go to somebody else's home, they're going to have probably similar hazards. So it's not like you have to get down on their hands and knees and at that person's home.
It'd be a very interesting intro family.
But that's what you've got to kind of think about. If it's possible, you would let your host, assist with preparing for this visit, and again, as your opening story, when you talked about the getting stuff up, that's kind of the thing that they're going to have to look at, to watch the knickknacks and things of that nature. They may have to clean off their coffee table just like you have to do at home. Again, it depends what's there. I think you as a parent have to just be on, it just increases your guard a little bit more in terms of watching things. And of course, again, making sure you teach your child, however you're going to teach them that some things are off limits and shouldn't be touched, and you have to try and explain it in those same manners.
Can you say something like, Johnny is just learning how to pull up on things, something to sort of key in the host as to where your child is developmentally, so that they might think, oh, the kid's pulling up on things. I think I better move that little antique table away or something like that.
Yeah, and that's, I would think that, again, you, where you're going to go visit, you're obviously some places you can maybe be a little bit more blunter, and some places you can you can kind of hint around as to what are going to be some of the issues.
Being on the opposite end of that, we have hosted a family with a child who was about two and loved doors. He was just short of two, and he loved all kinds of doors, and he wanted to open and close our sliding screen door, our sliding glass door, our kitchen cabinets. And so the parents were quite apologetic about this, and they said, we're going to have a real tough time with him unless we give him some doors he can open and close. And I said, well, I'm only worried about his own fingers, aside from what's in the cabinets. I said, I'll show you where there are cabinets which are just plastic things, and I'll show you how hard this door can close or how hard it is to open and close it. I said, then you're responsible for your child. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't mind if your child is opening and closing doors at my house, as long as one of you is right there with the child. Mm-hmm. And during that stage of that child's life, that is indeed exactly what they did. Every time they visited, one parent was with the child while he opened and closed doors.
Yeah. Well, actually, what you said is really true, because in some situation that, you know, we have clients, the client really may have a child who's only 5 months, but they're child-proofing their home because they know a friend is visiting with their child, or a sister is visiting, and sometimes you will hear, this is not really for my child yet because my child is only 5 months, but I'm going to have my nieces here who's going to be here for 2 months or something like that. And so in lots of situation when there is a parent with a child, they become sensitive also if they have friends who are visiting with children, you know, because they know and perhaps understand more, okay, that not only am I responsible for my child, but also for my visitor who's got children.
Mm-hmm. That probably lowers the blood pressure for everybody involved.
Yeah.
What if you're traveling outside of the country?
I think parents should think, okay, when they're traveling outside of the country, is to check with your pediatrician, especially on the issue of poisoning, because in our country, 911, let's say if you're here in our country, a child consumes something that's actually poisonous, you could dial 911 and they could somebody could respond to you whether to give Ipecac or not Ipecac. However, Ipecac right now has become a little bit controversial, and you cannot get it anymore across the counter just like it was before. You have to have a prescription. And then therefore, if you're traveling outside the country, parents should check with your pediatrician if you're able to carry Ipecac, or what you should do in case your child swallowed any kind of a poisonous substance.
In addition to your website, www.childrenssafetycare.com, what resources would you suggest for our listeners who want to learn more about some of the issues and items we've discussed today?
One of the quick and easy ones would be the Consumer Product Safety Commission to look for recalls. Which is, you might find that of interest, which is www.cpsc.gov. If you want to poisonous plants, the best website that we've kind of found for the East Coast is a Cornell University website, which is www.ansci.cornell.edu/plants. And this is an animal website. The other one is the site for the International Association for Child Safety, which is IAFCS.com. And you should be able to find a list of child safety experts across the country. And there's actually some international folks that are in that website. So if your listeners are looking for someone to assist them with their child safety needs, they should check this website out.
We didn't talk much about plants, but I'm glad you gave a site to go and get that information. And I guess the key is get them out of your house or get them way up high.
I guess what you're looking at there is there's two issues with plants. One is whether they're poisonous or not, and the other one is the soil that they're in, and that's, of course, is a choking hazard.
But if I could add there that, you know, because a lot of our clients doesn't know three specific vegetables that are very poisonous and could be lethal to a child: tomato, potato, and rhubarb. The only thing that's edible on those three plants is what we eat, especially the tomato plant. And the reason why we're bringing this up, a lot of tomatoes are sold on vines. So it is not okay for the parents to say, okay, I'm going to get this tomato and put this in the refrigerator and give the child the vine so that the child could play with it or could chew on them, especially if they're teething, everything is shoved to the mouth. It's very poisonous. because if you look at the tomato plant, the leaves has some kind of an enzyme, which is kind of an alkaloid enzyme, and they are very poisonous to a child. So, and because it's fairly common that families may grow tomato plants, so it is not okay that a child may even play around tomato patches. If you even have to harvest tomato, be sure the parents wash their hands before holding a child.
Thank you for that.
That is eye-opening. We have a very good friend who's a pediatrician who swears that children under the age of, I think, maybe four should not be given grapes unless they're cut up, because the grapes evidently are just the size of the windpipe.
Exactly.
And
right.
Unlike, what are the lifesavers, there's no hole in the middle of the grape where you could pull it out.
Yeah.
Well, this has been tremendously eye-opening, and we are very grateful to both of you, Nita and Vern, for coming on to talk about child-proofing our homes.
Well, thank you very much for inviting us. We really appreciate it.
Yes, thanks.
Our gift for our first caller is a copy of The Little Book, a special guide for parents of special children. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and mention show number 301. Again, that's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious, and don't forget your zip code. Tell us what station you're listening to if you can. Since we air all over the world, it's fun to know where you are tuning in. Our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, is available in all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents Perspective, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. At the site, you can even hear a show at any time. Just scroll down to the topic or guest of your choice and click onto the words Listen to Podcast below that topic. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the Blumberg family. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.